Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Brett Barmalo.
You gotta cut that right.
Nailed it.
I had to practice it in my mind several times, but I have to say, cheating to the audience, I spelt it phonetically, which I always do, and I still screw things up, but I got this one right. So Brett is the founder and CEO of Featured. I like the name. He connects experts with publishers to increase exposure for their subject matter. He himself is a published author and father of three, and helped, if we have time, I'd like to talk about this, helped Hugh Jackman launch a coffee company, which was then sold to Keurig. If we have time, we'll talk about it. So Brett, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What's the serendipity? What was the coincidence, the accident that happened in your life, that Ajinoi moment, the soul knowledge moment, that you were doing certain things in your life and you didn't just go down this road immediately? What kind of pushed you? I don't want to go down that. Just kept pushed you. All right, fine, I give. I'll go down that road. I'm sure there's a lot, but what comes to mind?
Well, I haven't given too much thought about this, but I was once a corporate auditor out of school, so I majored in accounting. And the thing that pushed me down the other path or the other road was actually physically a recreational vehicle in an RV. And so coming out of school, I read this stat that half the American workforce dislikes what they do for a living, and read that stat and looked around me and noticed that a lot of college students didn't really know what the next step looked like after graduation. And so I created a website that sent me and three friends around the country in an RV interviewing people about their career paths and documenting that on a website for other college students to look to for career inspiration and career guidance. And so flash forward, I did one summer tour, interviewed 75 people, went to go work as an auditor, and then started to see the website get this uptick in traffic and inquiries and things like that. And so about 10 months after I started my job, I quit my job, got another road trip together, and then traveled 16,000 miles, 38 states, interviewed 300 more people, wrote a book about it, and put me on kind of the journey that I've been on since. So that was probably the serendipity moment of going from financial statements over to being behind the wheel.
I love the story. So you went to how many states in total?
38. Yeah, about 38.
Wow. That's unbelievable. So you and two other buddies, right?
Yep. Yeah. Two buddies on the first one and then three different buddies on the second one.
So that's wild. And the stories are generally about where they came from, how they did business, or were you?
Where were you at 22 and how did you get to where you are? And that was pretty much the interviews. So these interviews would be, you know, anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, and people would open up and talk about, you know, how they found their way. And it was really, really interesting. And I think that one of the biggest takeaways from it is, one, people don't have a meaningful outlet to share their life's accumulations and expertise. You know, not everyone gets to be on your show. Not everyone gets the microphone. Not everyone gets to share. And so, you know, that was really interesting to have this innocence and curiosity as a recent college grad to really just be open and want to learn from everyone. And so we interviewed people ranging from like the CEO of MGM Grand to a fainting goat farmer in Tennessee, and got to learn something from each and every one of them, and very, very foundational in terms of, you know, my life views and things like that. So really, really cool.
That's very interesting. I love that story. Tell me more about the company name Featured. Is that where you got the name from those travels, or where did that come from?
Yeah. So originally the company name was Turkle, and Turkle to us meant giving voice to the uncelebrated. Oh. And that's really at the core of the platform is, you know, and even going back to the road trip, you know, not everyone has the opportunity to share expertise. And so the platform really equalizes and levels the playing field for anyone to show up, look at questions that pertain to their expertise, and be able to answer those questions to see their insights published in articles in more than 500 different places. And so Featured was a word that we had submitted our information for about 3 years prior to starting the company. We went to featured.com, thought it was a very functional, descriptive word that described what we do, where you can answer questions and get featured on Fast Company or Forbes. And so 3 years go by, we finally get this email from the domain broker that's like, hey, I'm liquidating our portfolio. would you still be interested in this this domain? And so we started those conversations in March of this year, acquired the domain, and then rebranded at the end of July.
Oh, interesting. So that's where Featured came from.
Yep.
Okay. So it has a definite meaning behind it. And how can you, you know, one of the things that you, on some of the questions I was looking over, how can you get featured in a media article? Now, people that are listening, maybe they have a brand, or maybe they have a book, maybe they have a concept or idea, and they don't know where to get started and how to get out there. You know, people don't realize this, but most of the podcast shows out there fail at about 7 or 8. They don't last very long, and they don't have a lot of listeners, or they don't have, you know, consistency, or it just simply stops going. And these are just facts. I'm not doing this to say my show is better than anybody else. It isn't. But there's a lot of moving parts on the internet and everything. I kind of call this a radio show on the internet. So how do you get something to have a media article? I mean, that's very unusual and hard to get. You would think it'd be difficult to find somebody. I don't know anybody at the newspaper. I don't know anybody at a magazine. How do you even start with that?
You nailed it in terms of how it's always traditionally worked, in the sense that you've got to have a relationship at one of these publications, and or, you know, hire a PR firm that has the relationships. And so that's changed a lot as technology's advanced. There's been a lot more platforms like featured.com where you could show up and, you know, have that equalized playing field where you can don't need the relationship and you could still share your expertise. And so you see a lot of newsrooms around the country right now looking to diversify the sources that they are featuring in coverage. And so platforms like ours are a way to essentially connect subject matter experts with those publications so that there's a mutual benefit of the expert getting featured and then the news organization, you know, getting diverse and expert insights.
So you have the connections and the relationships to be able to go, Brett, I have this concept, I have this new thing, I have a new way of making a shoe or whatever it is, my philosophy that I have or whatever you're doing. And then go up and I ask, Brett, how do I get this out there? You helped somebody come up with the words and the phrasing and then being able to give it to outlets to be able to then present that in what kind of form, on paper and internet?
Just to visualize it. So the experience is like you would go to feature.com, you would sign up, and upon sign up, there's a whole long list of questions that hopefully speak to your expertise. And so we look to personalize the experience based off of the information that you've submitted on sign up, like what's your job title, what's the company that you're working for, things like that. And so you'll essentially be able to see all these different questions that you don't really need something to answer because it's the natural thing that you know about. So usually when people see a question, they're so eager to answer, they could jump in and answer in 4 to 8 sentences and then press submit. And it usually takes about 4 minutes in total. And then with those 4 minutes, you know, you basically can, we'll send that on to the publisher for consideration. And then if they love it, then they could publish it.
Can you help people? Because not everybody is good at, you know, editing and writing. And if you say, you know, if you say the word, I do this all the time, the wrong there, you know, stuff like that. Do you assist people in getting it right so it makes it look better?
Yeah, we'll do some light editing on our side. So for like grammar errors and things like that, we'll essentially correct it before we send it off to the publisher. And that way, you know, they don't have to worry about it. There's not a whole lot of work that goes into, you know, the submission process. And it's really just allowing that expert to share personalized experiences that they've had so that, you know, they can focus on that.
And this is both digital and on paper form too, or
this
magazines?
This is primarily digital. And so I would say the vast majority of what we do is purely digital at this point. We don't do podcasts. We don't do, you know, connecting breakout keynote speakers with conference organizers. None of that. It's just purely, you know, do you have expertise? We'll connect you with a brand or a blog that is running some sort of coverage.
So it's an idea of getting more of the word out there in the digital world in a way that I wouldn't necessarily have time for or even are aware of how to do it.
Right, right. And this kind of goes back to what I was doing for the last 10 years, which was running a digital marketing company. And so we service more than 500 different small businesses over the course of those 10 years. And so every one of them had a need to build up visibility for themselves and their businesses, but they lacked the relationships and resources to get that visibility, you know, out there. And so they're hiring agencies like ours to do that. And I don't know if you've ever hired a marketing agency, but there's more marketing agencies and coffee shops in the United States. And it's an incredibly frustrating experience for a small business owner. Most people would come to me, I would answer the phone, and they would always come from a place of distrust, you know,
yes.
because there's so many marketing agencies that it's really hard to find the right help. And so a lot of these small business owners have been burned before. They paid out $2,500 a month for 3 months, mm-hmm. didn't see any results. And now they're like, I hate marketing agencies, but the need to build visibility so that they could grow their business is so strong that they have to continue to try that tactic. Otherwise, they can't just write off digital altogether. And so the need to build visibility is very, very high. But the ways to do that are very limited in terms of what works. And so that's really what inspired us to create this platform, is a way to, again, democratize the thought leadership and then level the playing field for public relations.
And that's very well put, because I know no names here, but I was at some company, I spent a couple of grand, and what you don't know, you don't know. And it seemed okay, and nothing happened. I mean, I learned so much from it. I couldn't pay enough money for it, but I learned, ask this question, ask that question. Again, you don't know, you don't know. And there was a lot of promises and a lot of, I could do this, and here's some suggestions. And when I said, so-and-so, help me with this. What do you think? It's like, I don't know. I'm not your business. I'm like, oops, that's not, that kind of like threw me. It wasn't on a Zoom call, but you know, you can read people's physical, the way they're standing or whatever, on a Zoom call on the thing. I used to be an engineer in the medical field. I could always hear people's voice context and everything. It was like, well, I'm not in your business. I don't know. I'm like, wait a minute. What did you just say? I'm thinking, I just want to ask you a question, because I don't understand. So you're right. There's kind of like, it's when you go into any kind of social media platform, you've probably experienced this. You know, I'm a doctor, I'm a sewer worker, I'm a dentist, I'm a brain surgeon, I've been to the moon, I'm an engineer. And you know, it's like, okay, what do you do? It's like, and then you talk to them, it's like, there's nothing there. So there's a lot of, my kids used to call when they were little, fakey people, a lot of fakey. And they might mean well. I don't think they're going out to do something, you know, bad or anything, but when you start talking to them, there's nothing there. It's like, you know, and then you share what you have and they're like, oh, that's great. It's like, well, tell me more about what you could do. It's this, the company name or whatever, you know, because they get the little company names that kind of reflect what they're supposed to do, and it's nothing. And I understand the painstaking process of going through that, because the internet has brought to the marketplace so many of them that you don't know. They could have a really cool website and they could have a great video, but they're doing it only from 8 to 9 at night, Thursday through Sunday. You know, not knocking it, but there's nothing there. So it's kind of, people really get, I don't say if say scammed, but they don't know.
Yeah, help is hard to find. And you know, for anyone who's like looking for help, you know, what I found, I no longer run the agency. I sold it a couple of years ago, and have been focused on featured since. But you know, for people who are looking to get acquainted with great agencies, there's a couple of reputable sources that are out there. One, I find it very helpful to look at a website called Clutch. Clutch has ratings and reviews of different marketing agencies. Like any ratings and reviews, there's, you know, some ways to game the system and things like that, but you can read through it, and they do a pretty good job of vetting those. But you know, the other thing is, if you're looking for marketing help and hiring help, it's really finding an agency that specializes in what you do. So it's getting clarity around, here's this objective. Now, what are the right channels that help me reach that objective?
Right.
And ultimately, who's the agency that specializes in those channels and in my industry or business? And that helps whittle down, you know, a lot of those filters. So, you know, for anyone who's out there looking at those are good things to ask.
Okay, I appreciate that, because it's very interesting to go through these unknowns. That's one of the reasons why I want to have you on the show. Venture capitalists. I laugh because I went down my own path of a dark hole. And you learn. I didn't spend any money, but it's a very interesting place. How do you get people's money from that? Because venture capitalists are looking for return on investment. And, you know, one of the people that told me one time, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this gentleman actually told me, he wasn't a venture capitalist, but he told me to be a warning. He said, just realize if you ask for, say, $1 million, they want 5% of your business. Next thing you know, 5 years later, they own 80% of your business. So, you know, I know there's different types of investments, a different way they're doing it, but how do you find a venture capitalist? How do you do that? How do you, can you help people with that?
Yeah. So we've raised $1.8 million in venture capital to date from four different institutional investors, as well as some different angel investors. And so the thing, and this is the first time I've raised capital, the last couple of businesses I've had that have been bootstrapped. And so the thing with venture capital to understand is that they're looking for outsized returns. So to understand their business, you know, basically what a mantra is in venture capital is that you need to return the fund. So every investment they make needs to essentially return the fund of that, whatever fund they're investing out of. And so a venture capital firm might have a $20 million fund, for example. And so their $1 million investment in your company needs to return that $20 million, you know, or have the potential to return that $20 million. And so that is a big filter that weeds out a lot of businesses that aren't ready for venture capital. And that's one thing to consider when looking at financing structures and options for your business, of whether venture capital is actually right for you. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And so that's like criteria number one. Today's day and age, we're recording this podcast late 2023, and venture capital is a very different world from where it was in 2021 when it was a blip on the radar. You see startup valuations really spike. You saw investments being made in startups that didn't have a lot of traction. It was very much an idea. And that's a pretty common misunderstanding for venture capital is looking at, oh, I'm going to take this big swing on a business that isn't a business and just an idea on paper. I think venture capitalists today are very much looking for traction in their business and looking for high growth businesses that they could get behind, that if they were to write you a check, then it's going to produce some sort of predictable outcome that's going to fuel your growth faster. And so it's a very different world. It's a world that I very much enjoy. I think that I respect a lot of the venture capitalists that, you know, definitely on our team, but it's a very hard, you know, thing for a founder to get connected with the right people. Like anything, I think it just comes with a lot of persistence, a lot of, you know, knowing the right people and connections, and then, you know, just continuously having a business and building a business that's worth investing in.
Yeah. I mean, somebody one time when I was forcing out there, when you force an idea or a concept and it usually doesn't come out right, you know, trying to go, I got to make this work. And with the musical at the time, so that's why I stopped it over a year ago. And this one guy is like, oh, I can get these venture capitalists. I'm like, so sorry, I think I'll go to the library and see if I can understand. There's so many different parts of it. I just don't know. Next thing you know, he's like, well, I know people that might have some money. Then I know people, but why don't we just go to those Begathon websites and ask for some money from people? It went down really fast because people can say whatever they want. But when you, one of the awkward things is when you're talking to somebody, whether it's a bank or a venture capitalist or somebody that you want their money to invest in your business, you've got, you know, you have a product or a concept that's actually real. It's making a little money, but you see things, you know, it's got to have something to it. But asking the uncomfortable question of, what's the, and maybe you know that, I'm sure you know this answer. If a venture cap, when a venture capitalist invests in a company, let's say they have 10 companies, are they lucky if even one gets their money back?
Yeah, so that's basically the business model, is you've got to have a few outsized winners to return the fund and to make the money. So, you know, today, venture capitalists know that not every investment's going to work out. But I think that they're a lot more selective in terms of, you know, looking at those startups that they, I mean, they think that every investment that they make is going to ultimately return their funds and then let you know, the company run its course and see ultimately what happens.
All right. So it's, yeah, it's, you, it's almost like the stock market. It's legalized gambling. You know, it's, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I think that you'd have a lot of VCs that argue differently, you know, in terms of looking at, you know, their due diligence on different companies and looking at, you know, market size and looking at competitors and looking at where the world's going. There's a lot of different stuff, you know, that you could paint that picture with, but ultimately it's investing in ideas that are going to shape the world in a different way and then offer a better solution for customers.
And you've gone through it, so you understand it really well. What should we all know about writing a book and getting it published? I have a book, my first among four, that I want to do, and it's kind of at a standstill right now. I got somebody interested, publisher might be interested, but what exactly can you tell our audience? What should you, and myself, what you know about writing a book and getting it published? Because it doesn't seem to be the easiest thing in the world.
I'll say one thing that's kind of a joke, but not. And that's that 1,000 books takes up a lot of space. So I wrote a book, had 1,000 copies delivered to the office, and it is a gigantic amount of books that ultimately, you know, take up some space.
Right.
And so, you know, that's thing number one. Thing number two is like, what's really driving, what's success look like for writing a book? Like, what do you want out of writing a book? You know, is it like to make a difference in readers' lives? And if so, is a book the right medium to really, you know, inspire action amongst readers? Is it easier just to start a blog and a website and, you know, put the thoughts out there and or start a podcast and talk about the topic? Or like, what is the definition of success? Do you want just to be, you know, a published author and you want to do some book signings and do some, you know, signatures and stuff like that? Okay. Like, but getting clarity on that is super, super important. And then the last thing I'll say, just about a book as well was, what was I going to say? I think I'll stop it at that. Those are two important.
That's okay. That's okay. Because I was, when you were saying this, the first thing that popped to my mind is Chicken Soup for the Soul. So when Canfield and I can't remember the other guy's name came out with the book, they told somebody, I was reading about this a few years ago, we're going to sell like 70 million copies by the year 2000. And the guy who was talking, he said, that's a pretty big number. And they did. They actually sold like 75,000 copies, but they didn't do anything. I think it was such a unique idea. They didn't do anything. They took in people's information, collated the information, put those stories in there, had somebody proof. They didn't do anything. They had the concept. They had the idea, and they trademarked it. And they got dog food. They've got chicken soup for the soul, for a dog or a cat or marriage, and they still have people coming in, giving their stories, still using that format. And it's great. But most books aren't going to be like that. When I was talking to the latest person I'm talking to is a publishing company in this particular space on the spiritual side. And they said, you know, are you thinking you're going to make $1 million at this? I'm like, no. I was like, well, good. That just make sure you're clear on that, because you have to sell a lot of books. It's kind of like on Google for, you know, oh, I'm or not Google, YouTube. Oh, I'm a YouTube star. They take like 80% of it. It's like, you know, you need like 18 billion people to make $50. So I, from my perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's a great support mechanism for what you're pitching out there.
Yeah, I was also going to say that you need traction. So piggybacking off of the venture capital, who's going to invest in your business? If you're talking about books, what publishing company is going to invest in the book? Like, and so to do that, it's two very similar lenses where you've got to have the right team, the right traction, the right momentum, the right upside. Because ultimately, it's business. I mean, publishing companies are looking to make money. Venture capitalists are looking to make money. So how are you going to help them make money through your business or book that you're producing? I think that that's the most healthy lens that you could approach it with.
I think that's a perfect lens because, you know, when you buy something yourself, you want to return. You buy a car, you buy your food, your groceries, you buy your clothes, whatever you're buying, my recording studio, I don't want to buy something. Yeah, I could save $300, but then it breaks a week later. So you want a return on investment. I think, now that you mentioned, I think everything in life in some way or another is return on investment, right?
No one cares about your book. No one cares about your business. No one cares. They care about how you're going to make the money.
A conscious community audience, did you hear what he said? Nobody really cares. It's kind of like complaining. You know, I have some students, I'm Jewish, and my mother used to, when we were kids, called Yiddish, and there's a word called kvetching. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but kvetching is just a Yiddish word for complaining. My mom goes, you got nothing good to say, shut up, no kvetching in this house. And when somebody or a best friend or a loved one's going, hey, Brett, you know, hey, Brett, how you doing? You're doing great. Oh, Phil, how you doing? And you're thinking to yourself, oh, here we go. I'll just smile. I don't care. It's like, but I'll be cordial. I'm like, nobody cares. Yeah. If it's something that can support the whatever you're selling, and that's all I'm doing it for, and puts it down on paper and has some interest, and then that person gives it to you, and then that person gives it. I don't care about selling it, but it passes around. If it helps a little bit more, what the heck? It could not hurt at all. So we have enough time, not too much, but Hugh Jackman. Other than I went to see the last movie called Logan. Remember Logan? Did you see that one?
No.
Okay, so that's the wolf. He was the wolf guy or whatever, the superhero. And then that same evening, I went to see him singing in a musical. I'm like, is this the same actor? So that's the only thing when I read that you had some dealings with him. I thought about, like, I could see him do this, really aggressive, superhero guy. And then he's singing in the movie in the evening. So tell me about the Hugh Jackman thing with the coffee company and sold to Kering.
Yeah. That was being in the right place at the right time. Just was able to work with Hugh, his co-founder, and a barista to launch a coffee company. And I was basically in charge of a lot of the online digital components of taking something from nothing and non-existent brand to ultimately, being acquired by Keurig. And that was a pretty short stint. It was very eye-opening to work with an A-list celebrity and look at the type of attention that people like you get online. A lot of fans, and probably the most eye-opening experience from that was the value of public relations and looking at what's the business impact of being on Rachel Ray versus the Chew versus having an online publication and measuring the impact on each one of those. That was incredibly fun to look at, just because it's like, hey, here's this one news place, but what is our Google Analytics say about how that drove revenue, and how do we replicate that success so that we get more fans and more sales and stuff like that? So that's kind of interesting. But I wanted to go back real quick to what we were just talking about with no one cares about your book, no one cares about your business, because I think that if there's one thing to take away as a listener, it's truly that, and to craft the pitch around how your business or book is going to drive revenue. And so for years, I was pitching and to venture capitalists featured and had our pitch deck and everything. And I think that the common thing that most people fall into is caring about their book business, because it's natural. It means so much to you. But when you focus on, and this is what I was going to say, is that around like slide 7, we would have a revenue slide. And so up and to the right, every single quarter, growing. The biggest difference that was made is that I put that slide from slide 7 to slide 1 and kicked off with, hey, this business is growing. Now here's the business. So that's the key difference, is that no one cares about what the business is, what the book is. The book could have blank pages, no words in it. And if you show that the book is selling, then it's like, oh, people need notebooks to write in. That's a book.
Right. Right.
So you make the business case first, and then have everything else fall in line. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways.
I think that's great, because I was going to ask you to leave a positive aphorism with our audience. You just did. One of the things, when I was younger, there was something called a pet rock. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Oh, yeah.
But, okay, a pet rock? Seriously? Now, I don't know if I had venture capital. I didn't do any investigation on it, but say Brett's a venture capitalist, and you sold, you're looking at going, okay, it's a rock painted. What are you talking about? But then you put a slide on going, I sold 500 of them in a week. Next week, I sold 600 of them. And your point is so on point. If you really want to catch somebody's attention, say right off the top, without wasting their time about the new pencil or the new this or the new that, here's the numbers. In the past 6 months, this is what happened. In the past year, this is what happened. And then, boom, you already got their attention. Then they're going, oh, I wonder what that is, instead of just kind of going through the same old thing.
And going back to your comment about the fakies out there, it's because not everyone has the real traction to support it. Everyone's selling the dream. So if you're leading with real numbers, real traction, you stand out from 90% of the other pitches that a venture capitalist or a book publisher hears. And so, if you could just prove that you're the real deal on stuff and work hard to be the real deal, then you're going to find success.
Yeah, no, very well put it. Brett, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show today. Thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That's what this was all about today. Get it right. The thinking thoughts. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.